Hello and welcome to episode 13 of the Structure and Interpretation of Computer Programmers podcast. Once again, a bored man has got access to a microphone and will use it to be wrong on the internet. Now in this episode, the topic is an old design principle from object-oriented programming. It's the open-closed principle. I want to take a look at this idea in quite a lot of detail because I think it's definitely one of the most widely quoted and propagated object-oriented design principles, being one of Robert Martin's five principles alongside the Liskov substitution principle, the interface segregation, dependency inversion, and the one that the S stands for in SOLID, which together, the single responsibility principle. There we go. Well done, Graham. Brain firing on all cylinders as ever. So Bob Martin collected these five principles from various people, called them the SOLID principles, and they're very widely sort of quoted and propagated as examples of how to design when using the object-oriented paradigm. But I think the open and closed principle is probably the most difficult to understand, certainly the most weird of the phrases. It's this sort of inherent contradiction that something is both open and closed. So I have in front of me the book in which the open-closed principle was initially described, and that is the book Object-Oriented Software Construction, the first edition by Bertrand Meyer. This is the book that kind of introduced the Eiffel programming language to the world. And it is, pretty much the equivalent of like Bjarne Stroustrup's C++ programming language or Brad Cox's object-oriented programming and evolutionary approach. It really sort of straddles the line between those. I've often said that where the Kernighan and Ritchie C book is a manual for people who already know how to program a computer to do it in C, Bjarne Stroustrup's C++ programming language book is a guide to the problems that the C++, particularly Stroustrup, but the C++ developers and definers were trying to solve. The list of problems they were trying to solve and why they chose the design features of the C++ programming language and what trade-offs are involved. The book Object-Oriented Programming and Evolutionary Approach by Cox is not really a manual for the Objective-C programming language. It uses the Objective-C programming language as an example for how to evolve an object-oriented system in the way that Cox expects people to do it. And I think like the Bertrand Meyer book is very similar. In fact, the second edition went as far as to sort of be a detective novel where he explains all of the design principles of object-oriented programming and says, so you would need some kind of notation in order to express this, and then introduces that notation. And only in the very last page of the book does he say, this notation is actually executable and is the programming language Eiffel. The first edition is explicitly about Eiffel. He's not trying to hide it from anybody, but is definitely a discussion of how object-oriented programming supports high-quality software and the design of software, and then how Eiffel supports object-oriented programming. So the open-closed principle appears in the chapter on modularity, where the first chapter is about aspects of software quality and talks about the need for flexibility in a design, because you need to be extendable, reusable, and compatible with whatever your customers are trying to do, and other external factors like how the software is going to be maintained. Modularity is introduced in Chapter 2 as the with motivation that it is the fundamental architectural principle through which this flexibility is going to be obtained. And there are five criteria for modularity. One is decomposition, i.e. can you decompose your big problem into a collection of small solvable problems, and does each module address one of those small solvable problems? So this is almost like the interface segregation principle, or even the single responsibility principle, but in 1986 by Bertrand Meyer, not in 1999 by Bob Martin. Then after decomposability, there's composability. Can you combine the modules that you've defined with each other to create new systems that solve new problems, potentially in new environments? Then there's understandability. Are you producing modules that can separately be understood by a human reader, or maybe just by looking at a couple of neighboring modules? And then continuity, and this is an interesting one. A design method satisfies modular continuity if a small change in a problem specification results in a change of just one module or few modules in the system obtained from the specification through the method. Such changes should not affect the architecture of the system, that is to say, the relations between modules. So that's very much the same as the later single responsibility principle, that a module should have one and only one reason to change. Thus, if you make one change, you should change one module. And finally, modular protection. A method satisfies the modular protection criterion if it yields architectures in which the effect of an abnormal condition occurring at runtime in a module will remain confined to this module, or at least will propagate to a few neighbouring modules only. So he's got these five criteria for modularity, and then derives his own five principles, which are linguistic modular units. Modules must correspond to syntactic units in the language used. Now that's almost obvious. Like, you should have a feature in your language that is the boundary of a module, and you know, everything has that now. Python has that, Java has that. Swift does have modules. C++ doesn't so much. It has namespaces, but it has classes, and that's really what Bertrand Meyer is talking about here. He's saying that, you know, the class is the module. It is the sort of boundary at which all of these criteria apply. The few interfaces principle, so every module should communicate with as few others as possible, and that's the thing that allows for a module to be understood, is that you don't have to understand all of its neighbours and all of the rest of the system that it interacts with in order to see how it works. It has the small interfaces or weak coupling principle. If any two modules communicate at all, they should exchange as little information as possible. The explicit interfaces principle. Whenever two modules A and B communicate, this must be obvious from the text of A or B or both. And these days, we would probably try and avoid both, because that would represent a cyclic dependency. If A has explicit requirements of the interface on B, and B has explicit requirements on the interface on A, then we would say we don't have two modules here. We have a single module AB that has to be understood in toto, because the two parts are closely coupled. And finally, he's got the information hiding principle. which is all information about a module should be private to the module unless it is specifically declared public. The open-closed principle follows from this, having come up with his five criteria and then the five principles that satisfy those criteria. Maya basically just sneaks another one in and says, oh, we also need this other thing in order to have good modular decomposition. And so I will just read the first paragraph from the introduction of the open-closed principle, and then we'll go into the discussion. A satisfactory modular decomposition technique must satisfy one more requirement. It should yield modules that are both open and closed. A module will be said to be open if it is still available for extension. For example, it should be possible to add fields to the data structures it contains, or new elements to the set of functions it performs. A module will be said to be closed if it is available for use by other modules. This assumes that the module has been given a well-defined, stable description, the interface in the sense of information hiding. In the case of a programming language module, a closed module is one that may be compiled and stored in a library for others to use. So he's basically saying that the interface for the module and the behaviour of the module must be published and stable. But also it must be possible to add new unforeseen features, whether they be data storage or behaviour in the sense of operations, to a module. And so the point of this principle is that there's an inherent contradiction. How can I allow extension if I also accept stability? And the answer provided by Bertrand Meyer and by the Eiffel programming language is inheritance. If I have a class that represents a module that has a particular stable set of features and stable behavior, I should not modify that class, because then I introduce unknown behavior with relation to any other class that has a dependency on that one, any other module that interfaces with that module. But because I can create a new class that inherits from the old class, I can keep all of the private information in that module private, I can keep the behavior of that module static, and I can introduce my new features and my new operations in my new descendant class. So a module that inherits from another module is respecting the closure of the parent interface, because it doesn't change any of the parent module's behavior. It also permits openness by providing a new home for extensions to the behavior or extensions to the data used by the module. So yeah, we can think about like categories in Objective-C, which are ways to write new methods onto an existing class, and we can say, well, those don't support the goal of open and closed, because while they support the open principle, they support the idea that we can add new capabilities to a class, they don't respect the closure of the original interface. It's possible to replace existing methods or change the meaning of data stored within the module. But something like C-sharp's extension methods, which allow the programmer in a different namespace and in a different static class to introduce a static method that operates on instances of another class with a special this parameter keyword saying that it can be used as a method on the object that appears as its first parameter, those do provide a useful pattern for open-closed, where we get to keep the original type closed. You know, we're not allowed to modify the behavior of, say, a string in C-sharp by using an extension method, but we can add a new method that becomes an instance method of a string. Therefore, we can add new behavior and new data storage to this existing class. Now, look at how restrictive this principle is. Openness refers only to adding new features. If you want to change the specification of an existing feature, you're out of luck. If you want to remove an existing feature, that's definitely out of luck. And that's because the support for the programmer who is using the module you've defined is more important than the support for any change that you might wish to make. And that's reasonable because there probably will be more users of your module than just the one person who created it, or the one team who created it. Also, changing the specification of a feature or removing a feature entirely would be a violation of the Liskov substitution principle as well, because it would be a violation of something that is more strict than the Liskov substitution principle. If you imagine that for any type T, a program that works with type T should work with a program of type T, which is almost like reflexive in its definition. If I remove a feature from type T in a scare quotes extension mechanism, then I can no longer even use that type, let alone any subtype in the same program. So definitely a violation of the expectations of how to use these modules. So the only thing we're allowed to do is to add new features, and we're not even allowed to add new features by modifying the classes we've already created. We have to add them somewhere else, and Bertrand Meyer's proposal is that we do it in subclasses. Overall, this sounds like, as well as making things conceptually easier for programmers, it's also solving what is called the fragile client problem, where if you add something to the interface of a module or change the method signature of any function in a module, then everything that depends on that module needs to be recompiled. A lot of modern programming environments don't actually have that issue, although they don't have it for different reasons. Sometimes in the case of JavaScript, it's because you don't compile the method signature and don't actually have any kind of guaranteed ABI between two modules. Any function can call any other function with any number of arguments, and it's up to the recipient function to work out what to do with the arguments it's received, however many there are. Other programming environments don't have the fragile client problem because they compile everything at the same time. So look at a language like Java, which compiles all classes that are in the project at the time that it compiles any one class in the project, or has to rely on sort of destructuring the interfaces for methods from binary class artifacts. Anyway, those environments don't have the fragile compilation problem, which something like C++ does, or Eiffel would do, but the open-close principle does solve the fragile mental model problem. Once I've adopted a particular class, I know that it won't change because I know that the programmer won't make any changes to it. They won't alter the contract with which I rely on that class in my module. Therefore, my module's behavior is also stable. I explicitly have to use a different class if I want to get a different feature. So imagine in semantic versioning, where we have the x.y.z and bug fixes are the .z, which is unfortunate because bug fixes can mean changes to the contract that just don't involve changing the signatures of any of the methods. .y is any new feature addition, and the x version part is very large changes to the API of the module. Well, in a world where people used the open-closed principle, semantic versioning would be large version would just be like you've got a different module, right? You have written a different thing that solves this problem. I would never want to go from version one of your module to version two of your module, because that basically means rewriting my module and not understanding what the expectations are anymore. But I might want to know that you've created a second version of this module so I can evaluate whether to use it. The dot wise would not exist. So I wouldn't go from 1.2 to 1.3 because those would now be different modules. What previously was version 1.3 would now be a subclass of version 1.2. In fact, there would only ever be 1.0, and then subclass adds this feature and subclass adds this feature. Now, do you chain all of those, in which case getting the latest feature means you also get all of the ones in between, which is, you know, reasonable from a software release perspective and makes for some pretty worrying looking inheritance graphs, except that you don't care about the inheritance graph because you don't actually want to use any of the parent interfaces of the module that you accept. You want to use the public methods and features of that module, which include the public methods and features that were exposed by the parents, but you never want to actually use those parents yourself. So this idea that the inheritance tree would get unwieldy, and the idea that you should have a flat inheritance structure with at most n degrees of subclassing doesn't show itself as necessary in a world with the open-closed principle. And then you would still have the bug fix version, the .z, except you couldn't release those because those are changes to the behavior of the module, which we've decided is closed. So actually, semantic versioning completely disappears in a world with open-closed principle, because you release your version, you release your module, and then from that point on, you declare it as stable. Now, obviously, if you want to do that, you have to be somewhat confident that it's correct. And so Eiffel introduces design by contract, which we talked about in a previous episode, in order to give you extra assurances about the correctness of your module and extra design tools to help you think about the correctness of your module. But we're not doing this. You know, when I say what is the reference of the relevance of the open-closed principle to the modern programmer, I kind of mean the modern programmer who doesn't do this, not the modern programmer who has transcended this, because we didn't necessarily transcend it. We didn't necessarily visit this point in the evolutionary nature of programming languages. Some of us did, you know, some of us were Eiffel programmers, and some of us didn't, and have never thought about open-closed principle, or have never thought about design by contract or about the correctness of our modules. But the idea that once you've published something, you don't change it for people who are already using it is an important feature. And even in systems where, like, the semantic versioning principle is used, you often don't find that old versions are kept around forever. So if you've got an old version, if you've got a dependency on an old version of a library where, like, API changes have been made in later versions, and therefore the authors have violated the open-closed principle, so you can't cleanly update to the latest version, you may find it's no longer possible to download the old version without, you know, grabbing their source code, assuming it was an open source module that you're using, and then compiling it for yourself. Now, an interesting counterexample from the both retro and modern computing world is libraries on the Amiga operating system, because the Amiga didn't have shared objects in the way that macOS dynamic libraries or ELF, so like Linux and Unix shared objects, or Windows dynamic loaded libraries work. What it had was they had library files that had code, but they had code for the functions that they exposed, and it had a dispatch table at the front, which was a numbered dispatch table. It had a version number, and then it had numbered slots for each of the functions in the library. So if you wanted to update a function, say you discovered there was a bug in your hit test code and you needed to write a new version of the hit test for sprites in an Amiga graphic system, you would create a new function in the new version of the library. You would change the dispatch table so that the hit test entry resolved to the number, the index for the new version of the function. And then any program that linked against that version of the dispatch table would resolve the hit test function to the new version. But any existing program would still have the old number in place, and so would jump to the original version of the function. So this is like automatic linked on or after checks for dynamic libraries. You open the library, you say give me function 6, and you get function 6, and then the library author never changes function 6. They replace function 6 with function 13 and update the dispatch table so that a newer program, when it is compiled, sees that it should use function 13 instead of function 6 for whatever behavior it's after. Now, compare this idea of the open-closed principle, where we can add fields to a module's data structures or functions to a set of operations, but cannot change the module interface, it's published and it's stable. Compare that with the final keyword that you find in object-oriented languages like Java. So a final class is one that cannot be subclassed by another author. Well, those classes aren't necessarily closed for modification, because the original author is free to make changes and reissue the class with changes to the feature set of the class. But they're also not open for extension, because, well, at least they're not open for extension in the way Bertrand Meyer would understand, because you can't subclass them to add new fields or new functions to its set of operations. If you've got a language feature like C# language extensions, then you can add new operations using that. And people who say favour composition over inheritance would say that you can add fields or functions by creating a new class that contains those operations that delegates to the existing class. But of course, the way that the type systems in languages like Java and C# is defined stops you from using that new delegating class anywhere that you might use the old class. You would have to sort of unwrap the contained class, use that in existing code, and then keep the wrapper and the wrappee, if you like, in sync somehow. So it's not really a very good fit for the open-closed principle. So that is really the open-closed principle from object-oriented programming. Thank you very much for listening to this episode. As always, I welcome any feedback you have, any recommendations for new topics, anything about the delivery of the podcast that you would like to see changed or improved. I would love to hear about that. Any suggestions you have, I'm really interested in hearing about. You can send me an email, GrahamLee@acm.org. And you can find me on Twitter, IwasLeeG. That's IwasLeeG. Thanks very much. Stay safe, and I will talk to you next time.